This week on RSPNB Update, it's time for the lore of Caridet, and we'll uncover what's underneath this Second Age fortress. That's not all archaeology has in store, though. There's also the Inquisitors. What is this enigmatic organization up to, and when will we find out more? This is RSPNB Update, episode 802, recorded Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Into the Shadows. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update this week. It's a patch week for all intents and purposes, with a little bit of an update to the achievement system behind the scenes, but nonetheless, we are going to have a wonderful episode of RSBNB Update this week. The Lore Diggers are back this week, as we coined yes. ourselves.
Ooh, the name stuck!
It most certainly did. We're going to, of course, be talking about the final dig site, Caridet, the perhaps, in my view, most consequential one, lore-wise, but we'll wait till we dive into that, and a little bit of a surprise that you guys might not be aware of if you haven't progressed all the way through the archaeology lore, if you haven't read spoilers ahead. But nonetheless, welcome back to RSBNB Update. Tannis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane. Can you dig it?
Sirion, of course.
Hi.
And Diana.
Hello.
And I am Shane12088 in-game. And, you know, if you guys want to follow along with this, grab the full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And if you want to support the podcast with a little something extra, you can check out our Patreon page, which we'll give you a bit of a reminder about later on in the episode, at patreon.com/rsbnb. And I just saw a bunch of people run by me that were dressed the same at Caridet with archaeology cape and Herbert pet, which was a little bit odd. But nonetheless, we're going to dive straight into Caridet here. This is, of course, the first dig site that you unlock with the tutorial. And prior to the launch of Orthyn, it was the last dig site that you would finish, which I think is very poetic when you sum it up in terms of what it meant for archaeology. And, you know, Orthyn has added more lore to that, so I guess the lore diggers will need to do an encore at some point, which we will. But
eventually they'll finish the skill. Eventually I'll be able to stop doing archaeology. But
yeah, I mean, I thought I'd be done by now, but I'm still going. I'm actually considering doing a push for 120 on Double XP Live here.
Very nice. I think I might do that as well.
Yeah. Okay. What level are you right now?
I am level 108, so I'm very close.
Okay, I'm 112.
I've never done skilling beyond 99 before, so this might be my first 120.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Neat.
Very exciting.
Let's begin. Caridet, of course, the dig site focused around Zaros, one of the ones that has some of the, I think, most intricate puzzles in the game as well, and some of the biggest lore ramifications. So I guess we'll turn this over to our captain in lore, Diana, for a run-through on where we start with this. So where do you want to begin?
I want to start with some of the background for Caridet, because, like you said, this site's got a very interesting history, and it's the one I was most excited for to start with, because I'm really interested in Zarosian lore, in Second Age lore. It's a part of the game's history that I'm fascinated by. So
sure.
Here's a Zarosian site. Here's like a Second Age, Third Age site, bringing some of that to life. So that was very exciting to get into. Like you said, it's the first site you get access to, and before Orthyn, it covered the widest range of levels. So you start at level 5, I think, yep. Right at the start.
5.
With the Venator remains. And then it finishes at level 118. So it's a big site. This is a really, really big site. It was probably, I was thinking about why did they choose the Zaros site to be the big site like this? And I think it's probably because, at least amongst the lore community, Zaros is very much the most popular faction.
Yeah,
like
that's
true. Wonder what it is.
I think it's because he's the most mysterious, and you know, I still need to get the shirt made that said I was the original Zaros fanboy before Desert Treasure came out, and haven't done Temple at Sintistan. So, or sorry, the Dig Site quest, not Temple at Sintistan. That's something else.
Would you say you dug Zaros before everyone else?
Yes.
All right, archaeology pun. Check. Let's move on.
How many of those are we going to get in today? Terrible.
Is it because like they're so ordered in their daily lives that it's symbolic? Because Zaros is a figure of chaos.
Because he's the puppet master.
Or that. Okay.
Yeah, no, Zaros is fate and things like that. That's kind of what he's associated with. We know a lot about Second Age's origin history. We know a little less about what happened when the Third Age started and the God Wars all kicked off. So this site kind of fills in a few gaps there. Kind of what happened after Zaros died and what happened to his followers and his forces once their figurehead was dead or gone, or he wasn't really around anymore. Zaros himself has a really considerable connection to archaeology as a skill. And some people might not have seen this, but there was a pre-release cutscene to the skill where Zaros went to the dig site and raised the monolith.
Now, I had a question when I was looking at these docs with this. Is there any way you can replay that cutscene?
I don't know. I missed it. I didn't know this until someone told me. But I think it was a couple of days before the skill actually came out. The monolith, which had been sitting inactive in the dig site for a while, Zaros went there, raised it and activated it and left again.
Yep.
So he has some kind of connection to the skill. To me, it implies that what we're doing, interacting with the monolith and giving it these powers, is somehow benefiting him. I don't know how, don't know why, but it feels like to me that we're doing something that's part of his scheme at the moment.
Yeah, and I have a theory on this at the end that we'll get into as well with this. I don't know if you talked to Questcaping about the Inquisitors.
I have not. No,
I would recommend you have that chat then, but we'll save that for later.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. But that's an interesting note. The monolith is kind of associated with Wen and some aspect of the Elder God. I think there is some talk that it might be an Elder artifact.
Yeah, I want to save that for later too, because that all comes back to the Inquisitors.
Yeah. I just want to bring it in there that there is a massive connection with Zaros as well, which is why the site's also significant.
Yeah, okay.
The site manager for this part is Dr. Nabonik, who, if you've done the dig site quest, you'll know is Azanadra. He's one of the Majorat.
Yep.
He is at Zaros's second in command, kind of the head of his church. He's here in his human form. He's in his human disguise as the archaeologist. It's nice to see him again. He's kind of an ally to the World Guardian, more or less. He's mostly been quite friendly to us over the years. So he's here again, helping us out, and we're helping him out. He's here to look for, if you talk to him right at the start, for the Breaking the Seal mystery at the main entrance. We'll just, you know, dive on into the first mystery here.
Sure.
He tells you that at the end of the Second Age, start of the Third Age, whenever everything went wrong for Zaroasian forces, he tasked a trusted loyalist with defending this fortress of Karadet and its secrets. And that's why he's here. He's here to find out what happened to her after the fortress fell. That's your hook. That's your hook for this mystery. When you first get here and you first start off, there is someone here that he's looking for.
And talk about tip of the iceberg, because everything that you're mentioning now will come back to have a impact later on as we progress through the site.
Yeah, it's something that I really like about this site. And something I really like about the style of storytelling, that it's all very, everything comes together in a really satisfying way. And the style of storytelling is a little bit different in this one. Like in the other ones, we see it where, I think Everlight's a nice example of this. We get almost chronological stories, like logs and personal stories told over a wide range of time.
Yeah.
Covering quite a wide range of events over maybe several hundred years. In this one, every single log, every single bit of lore we get covers the same period, which is the fall of the fortress in the Third Age. it's exactly the same events each time, but they're told from five or six different perspectives.
Which when you think about it, is a way of storytelling that you would have in the past have only been able to do in books, and we've rarely seen that in popular media on the TV and whatnot. And when they pull this off in RS, I think it really exemplified what Caradet was about.
Yeah, so it's this one event where the fortress was here, but then it was attacked, and we haven't got to the actual details of it yet. We'll get to that when we get to actually inside the fortress. But there's five or six different characters and different people here who tell the same story from the same perspective, adding more detail, adding more information in each time until you get a complete picture of what actually happened here.
Right.
Which is really nice. I genuinely think the storytelling in this site's pretty good. It's good to see.
All right. I've just been having a quick gander around, and I can't find anywhere to get that pre-release cutscene, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's back at the actual dig site in Varrok. But I don't know whether you can actually replay the cutscene. Yeah. But it did happen. Varrok did raise the monolith, and I'm not making that up.
No, of course not. All right, what's next?
I'll say anything else on breaking the seal. Yeah, for this one, it's getting into the fortress, so you have to basically excavate the main entrance. And you get the Centurion seal off Asinadra. It's still part of the tutorial for the skill. Like, you're level 5 at this stage. You're still getting into how it works. Mm-hmm. It kind of walks you through.
After you've excavated your first few artifacts and then it opens up. And
You're still kind of getting into it here.
Yeah, that was one of the, you know, that's going to be everybody's first archaeology memory. And I think it's absolutely amazing that we were able to all experience that. Together on this.
I was really excited getting through this first bit. It's like, oh, we're getting into the first dig site. We're getting into the first major aspect of the skill, the first major environment. And this is our Zarosian one as well, which is quite exciting because we haven't really seen... I mean, we've seen a bit of Zarosian architecture and a bit of Zarosian environment before in the empty throne room, but not this sort. So it was a bit of anticipation here getting through the barrier. Like, oh, what are we going to see in here?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so then here you've got the main hook, you've got the main scene setting, and then you can get into the inner fortress after you've done breaking the seal. And yeah, another really big and beautiful environment down here.
And this is the bulk of where you're going to be expecting to do all your archaeology training in there. And of course, there's the pylon, which we talked about pylon mechanics in our first few episodes on this, but you know, you just take a gaze down and you can really appreciate the true scale of the inner fortress as it is. And you know, if you also look at the side of the walls, you can see that at some point there's two other doors that we weren't able to open, and with that, maybe at some point we will be able to expand that outwards.
Maybe, yeah. There's a lot of implication throughout the site and throughout the log that there is more to this site than we've actually found.
Yep.
There are more secrets here. There are things that are buried deeper.
And it would make sense. And it would make sense, you know, being Zaros-based, and they're always going to want to come back to that because Zaros has always been involved with those plans and whatnot about the Elder Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Elder Gods are at all mentioned in Caradet, but we will get to that at some point.
Yeah. I really love this interior environment. It is kind of subterranean, so it is quite dark and close, but it feels so atmospheric. Again, particularly with the music. I know I've talked about the music several times in several different sites, but the track that plays throughout here is very lovely. And it kind of feels, to me, this whole space almost feels like a cathedral, kind of really big and ancient and reverential.
Yeah, and you can tell that, you know, there are, of course, buildings and whatnot that have been destroyed, and some of them are half covered by sand, and you have to wonder what it would have been like had they not been covered, and it was in its original form, of course, too.
What did this look like thousands of years ago when it was a fortress at the edge of the desert? Like, what was this place like?
And what was it used for? Which we get a bit of an idea for later on in the mysteries, too.
Yeah. So yeah, there's several areas around here. There's like a barracks area, there's a kitchen area, there's a chapel, and there's a war room. Those are the main areas of this interior part of it. In terms of going through these areas, I'm going to cover all the ones in the inner fortress first.
All right, makes sense.
Not quite level chronological order, but I just want to get all the ones done in this area, and then we can go down to the prison and the vault, which are the other two main environment areas.
Take a sip.
Yeah, so the first thing you come across is a bit of research called Demon Door, which says the wall we are using to enter Karadet was seemingly breached from the outside long ago. Research suggests Karadet was under siege by an army of demons loyal to Zamorak very early on in the Third Age. The protective shield that sometimes activates here must have been breached. So here's your first clue as to how the fortress fell. There was a demon attack, and the pylon, which we've got sitting in the middle here, which was actually first shown in the letters from Tony, I think. Do you remember the teasers way before?
Yeah.
When I remember we had a chat about it before the skill actually released.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, we saw concept art of it too.
Yeah, I remember saying, I think this is what we're going to find at the center of the site. And I was kind of right, but not really at the same time.
Of course.
These things are the main artifacts you find. But yeah, obviously you charge them with the batteries, you get that massive buff mechanic thing. But they're also, from a lore perspective, they produce this protective shield around the fortress that keeps things out.
And the question is, if the shield was on, how did the Zamorakian demons manage to break through?
Yeah, how did they breach this fortress? Why was it breached? I mean, there's questions starting to be raised here, like what actually happened here? Like, we know how, but why?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And we're going to, of course, learn about that as we go on. And I just want to say that, you know, with most of the dig sites we have out there, things are not as they seem in, you know, Everlight and the Infernal Source, but that is definitely the case here in Karadet as well. But
yeah.
I can't wait to get to the end.
Well, in all the sites as you go through them, they start telling the stories and then they bring in more layers to it and they make it a little bit more complicated. And it's a very nice bit of iterative storytelling. Other bit of research you find up here is Proving Grounds, which is basically telling about the barracks where the army was based. So there's housing for the legionnaires and for imperial officers. And you've got your main excavation sites through here. There's the two little artifacts from the excavation sites with the imperial administratum debris. You find a little figurine of it's a Legatus Maximus figurine, which is figurine of Zamorak before he was... What are you laughing at?
Okay, yeah.
What are you laughing at?
I just found it funny that they would have little action figure kind of things, but I mean, hey, that's RuneScape, right?
Yeah, so you can find one of Zamorak, kind of pre-Ascension Zamorak, and there's one of Azanadra as well, so almost like little idols.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting aspect of kind of Zyrosian culture there. But yeah, little action figurines. Whenever I found the Azanadra one, I tried to give it to Dr. Navinik, just because I thought that would be quite a fun little thing, like here's a little figurine of you. But obviously nothing happened, a little bit disappointed there. But, you know, possibly an opportunity for a bit of post-quest dialogue. No, this isn't a quest, is it?
No.
For something there, at least. Yeah, and you also find some nice, interesting pieces of artwork. We've talked about artwork before in various past sites. They're nice bits of culture and bits of flavor that go in there, and you find it here as well.
Yeah, and a reminder to everybody that you can go to your archaeology journal and see high-quality pictures of all these artifacts.
Yes, you can. And they look lovely. They look very, very nice.
I'm looking at the Legatus Maximus figurine right now that you were mentioning.
Yeah, you can have a look at all the things kind of in better detail in your journal, which is always quite fun. You get to see some really nice bits of detail and things that you wouldn't otherwise. But yeah, those are the pieces of research you find up here. The mystery you get in this area is the locked door. That goes down to Prison Break. You excavate pieces of the custodian's log. There's lots of logs in this one. That's the main theme between the lore books. They're all logs of different people who lived and worked here. This is for the custodian, like the prison warden. Stefan... Oh, God, I can't say that surname. But he's a vampire, which is why the puzzle is in this particular form. This is a very typical vampire-style puzzle. We've seen it before in the Mareki series.
Yeah, exactly. Stepan Jovkai.
Jovkai, something like that.
I think Jovkai, because, you know, if you look at Mauritania and whatnot, all the NPCs in Mauritania have Russian names, so that's why I put the Russian accent on it. Jovkai.
House Jovkai. Yeah, that's it. That's one of the vampire houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of those things very similar to one of the lore books we found in the Infernal Source, where it simultaneously gives clues on how to solve the puzzle and kind of your instructions for how to solve the puzzle, while also being quite characterful and also being adding more flavor and adding more interesting things to it. Sorry, I've just seen Tannis in game. Hello.
Yeah, with his little sniper outfit, right?
The three of us just wandering around there. I wondered who that was. But yeah, so the puzzle is the elements that the buttons are there associated with match the prisoners and the length of their sentence. That's what you have to match up and put together.
I don't remember how to solve this because I did this on day two or three.
Yeah, same. I can't remember what the order should be. But that's basically, I think most people have done it by now. It's been a long time. Yeah. So no worries about that. This one includes several tells and several clues for later mysteries. So you get a mention of a demon who's been imprisoned there for some reason. He tried to assassinate someone and has been imprisoned for life. So what's that all about?
Exactly.
There's also a mention of a cult led by someone called Peter Dis. What's that all about? Adlon said references to the prefect of the fort, who's the leader of the fort. I thought at this stage that the prefect of the fort would be the ally that Azanadra's looking for, because it's referred to as she, and Azanadra's ally is a she. I thought, oh, this is the same person. This is their first mention. Turns out that's a red herring, but I'll go into that in a bit later. But yeah, a few more hooks into what's actually going on here.
And, you know, I don't know. At this point, were you involved fully in Kuradet, or did you think that we were going to have the impact in this site that we wound up having?
That's quite a difficult one. The ending of this one kind of took me by surprise.
Okay.
Of the entire site, I mean, I wasn't expecting it to go where it did.
Right.
I was definitely really intrigued by it, because I could kind of tell at this stage that there were this technique of adding more detail with each lore drop you get. I really wanted to find out.
Right, because we really haven't discussed anything major yet in this episode, but we are going to get there. We are.
There's quite a lot of detail.
And that's how the site went.
Yeah. And I just loved exploring it. I love being in this environment and finding all the little artifacts and reading the flavor text of them and just finding out more of what happened down here. Like, I just love being in this environment. I very much enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best sites out there, I think.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like I've been talking a lot. I don't know if anyone else has any comments at this stage, or...
Sirion?
Are we all good?
Tannis?
Is Sirion still there? Is your internet still...
No, I'm listening. I'm enjoying, enjoying this.
Yeah, I was...
I was worried your internet would cut out there.
I was looking forward to hearing the story of it, because I've actually spent the least amount of time here.
So. Okay, right.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's crack on then. Next part I'm going to go down to is further into the site. I'm just going to go down to the kitchens just to get that bit of research out of the way. A bit of small and inconsequential. It basically tells you that there were over 1,000 troops and support staff stationed here. So there's your sense of the scale of the operations. There was an entire legion stationed here, guarding the fortress, guarding whatever is hidden in the fortress.
And with that being said, everything we see here is just the tip of the iceberg still with our excavations, because there's no way that this was the entire fortress if there were 1,000 troops stationed here.
No, and I think that's where the doors come in and where you can kind of see it fading off into the darkness around you.
Yeah.
That there's no... I mean, if you compare it to Warforge, which is another subterranean one, you can definitely see the walls of Warforge and you can see where it ends. With this one, it just kind of fades off into the background. So there's this implication that this area is much, much bigger.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this in Warforged, that there's no skybox as well. And, you know, in RuneScape, there is no trend of, you know, looking up and seeing a roof. So are we just assuming in this case that when we look up, we see, you know, the ground above us? Because, of course, we are underground.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been assuming and what I've seen from some concept art. If you have a look on the wiki, there's some really lovely concept art of early versions of it. And it is meant to be kind of in a cavern. It is meant to be subterranean.
Okay, so just imagine, folks, if you look up, you would see the dirt and the ground from where you were walking above. And, you know, you look off into, you actually do look off into the distance. If you have high enough draw distance, you can actually see silhouettes behind the walls too. So
see, that's really cool. There's your using the background to kind of imply much bigger space.
Now let me just see if I have my draw distance. Yeah, I have my draw distance on high. If we ramp it up to ultra, it stays the same. So that is something that they are putting on with that. But you know, nonetheless, it still signifies that it goes beyond the walls that we see. So this is just the tip of the iceberg here in the kitchen area. Where we are, and you know, you actually included one of the concept arts in the notes here, which
there was quite a lot of concept art for this site published, and it's worth looking at because it is very detailed and actually adds a fair bit of, you know, context and background to it. I do love it; it looks really good.
And imagine what RuneScape would look like if we had Kuridat in a different kind of engine that actually could model a ceiling or something.
Oh,
subterranean
great,
like that.
Oh. can dream.
I know, and I mean that's of course no complaint to what we have now, but it's there.
Oh, there's always engine limitations and stuff like that.
All right, where are we going after the kitchen?
After the kitchens, we're going to go to the chapel.
Okay,
which is the first really interesting area to me.
Yeah, and you know, just a reminder that we aren't doing this in chronological level order as well.
No, we're not. We're just kind of doing it in the areas we find. This one's a bit weird, so I'm sorry about that. Otherwise, we'd be running backwards and forwards all evening.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you come into a chapel, and you expect it to be a lovely Zarosian chapel, you know, like a Temple of Centistin. We've all seen that kind of thing before. And then you look up at the stained glass. That's not Zaros in the stained glass. That's Orcus, who was a demon. He was the Duke of the Third Legion. And he's known as Duke Orcus the Necromancer. Why is there a chapel dedicated to a necromancer demon in a Zarosian fortress? What's going on there?
Questions abound.
Questions. Yeah, like why would... And this is all very official and all very open and obvious. They're not hiding this at all. So
yeah,
quite
and I mean, you don't throw up a stained glass motif to somebody who you don't like. And, you know, you have to question what the hell demons were doing with the Zarosian troops at that point and why there would be that chapel. So there's obviously something there. I also just want to draw people to the fact that this is another example of archaeology pushing the limits when it comes to the graphics, because this is actually being rendered as if it were glass, in terms of that you can see the different color of lighting going through that glass, as if, you know, you shine a beam of light through it, the color of the light changes. And if you get close enough to it, you can actually see your character kind of change with that as well.
I was really confused by this bit, because in the Dungeons & Dragons lore, Orcus is this big, it's the Lord of the Undead, right? The big demon lord.
See, that's the tie-in. Orcus in Roman mythology is the god of the underworld. He's the Hades equivalent. So that's where the name comes from. And obviously Zarosian culture is based on Roman culture, and Roman military culture specifically.
And we kind of knew that from the Armies of the Third Age thing that was talked about a few runefests ago.
Yes. Yeah. That's quite well known that it's basically the Latin Roman. It's analogous to that.
Even representing the fallen empire.
Yeah, very much so. I love how they've put one of the shadow anchors behind the stained glass. So if you've lit that up, you get a beautiful pink light all the way through it.
Yeah, that's actually what's doing it for me.
Mm, it looks lovely, doesn't it?
Yeah. And those are the shadow anchors that are lit with pylon batteries.
Yeah. In here, you also find the Cult of Orcus mystery. And this is what I meant, where it's the same story told by different perspectives. So previously we were talking about the custodian and he mentions Peter Dis. Now we have Peter Dis talking about what's going on. So they link into each other and they feed into each other.
Is there any link between Peter Dis and the Order of Dis?
Dis is a general word for hell. So his actual name is Peter Lucius Castilius.
Gotcha.
And Peter Dis is his nickname meaning Hellfather.
Ah, very, very interesting.
So Dis is just kind of a more general name. So yeah, Order of Dis is one of the demon homeworlds, or the demon home, one of the names for the demon.
And
homeworld.
We also saw that in the Infernal Source as well.
Yep.
I always get, like, when I see this Blood of Orcus, which is one of the materials, I'm always like, oh, that's a Zamorakian material, right? No, it's not.
This is where there's an interesting overlap with Zoroastrianism and Zamorakianism. Like, you've got to remember that one grew out of the other, and Zamorakian demons came from the Zoroastrian demons, so there is a big overlap there. So there's going to be common culture and common references between the two. These log pages describe how there are deep secrets in Kuradet that are really, really valuable to the Empire somehow, and they must be protected at all costs. And the Cult of Orcus is described as some kind of cult to this necromancer that exists within the Empire's hierarchy. It's kind of secret, but it's definitely not, you know, you'd expect in a highly religious society that rival gods and rival systems of worship like this might be suppressed, or they might be saying, no, you're not allowed to do that. But this seems to be not encouraged, but it's definitely not discouraged.
So I just have an idea here, and I don't want anybody to take it the wrong way. But when you look at this, and you know, you mentioned necromancy and the fact that these guys were necromancers, what if at some point in the future this archaeology site in this room, this Orcus guy, combined with, you know, 81 archaeology or 86 archaeology, depending on the spot, what if that was the jumping off point for a necromancy elite skill?
Oh, I thought you were going to say bring back Guthix. I was like, yeah. Oh.
No, I don't think that can
zombie
happen.
Guthix. Go, oh my goodness.
Go full nomad. And
hey,
just
anything's possible with time travel.
No, we're not doing time travel.
I'm only kidding.
Too late. We've already done time travel.
All right. Anything else?
I don't know how you could bring out an entire skill based on necromancy, but it is something that's explored a fair bit.
Yeah, it's just an idea off the side. Any idea on the Cult of Orcus? Anybody want to say anything else further on the Cult of Orcus? I mean, yeah.
You get another account of what happened with the demon attack. So there's a demon war party that attacks and drains their defenses. And you also get the first mentor of Praetor Trindine. This is Azanadra's ally, as it turns out. She was first seen in Children of Marshes and Majorat. She's Sliske's protege. She went into the vaults, there's mentions of vault, to perform a ritual of protection to try and protect the site against this demon onslaught. And the reason they're trying to do that is because they also have Saradomanist forces that are on their way to attack. So they've got this kind of double attack going on. Their forces have already been drained by the demons. What are they going to do? The Peter has this plan to trap the Saradomanist forces within the pylon bubble and then raise the undead to kill them. He says, I must make this place so forsaken that no more will dare set foot inside. So that's his plan to defend or eradicate the attackers and possibly eradicate everyone else as they went.
That's on brand.
It's very on brand for Zoroastrian necromancers. But here we go with more detail and more flavor of, okay, now we're finding out more about what happened here. It's the same sequence of events, but different perspectives and more layers each time.
All right. Next area?
Next area, I'm going to go for the war room.
All right.
Which is quite a high level area, and you kind of would uncover it after the prison, but I'm just going to cover it now because I'm standing next to it.
Yeah, because we're close, Agent we're close, close area wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is kind of a central area. There is a,
there's effectively a big map on the,
there's a big map. Table. There's a big kind of, very nice topographical, sorry, I nearly messed that up, map in the center of the room of the surrounding area, which is quite nice. And you can interact with it either when the pylons are active or if you've done one of the Sliske quests. I think it is Missing Presumed Death or might be Kindred Spirits. I can't remember which one exactly. You have Sliske's Gift and you can access it and access the Shadow Realm.
That, I believe, was Missing Presumed Death.
Was that Missing Presumed Death?
I
that
think
feels
so.
Like some too low level a quest for it, but I can't actually remember.
I was under the impression it was permanent once you enabled all the batteries.
Yes, if you enable all the batteries as well. Right. You basically get the Shadow Realm buff, and you can enter the Shadow Realm to access the Praetorium. And you can do Shadow Play, which is one other bit of research. An entire building hidden away in an overlapping realm. It's somehow been shifted into the Shadow Realm in order to hide its existence.
Fate of the Gods is when you got Sliske's Gift.
Fate of the Gods? Oh, blimey, I got that very wrong, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, shame on me.
Anyways.
There's two mysteries in here. They're both quite interesting mysteries. I'm going to go for Shadowfall first, which was written by one of the Praetorian Guards, so one of Trindine's guard. It gives a first-hand account of the demon force that attacked Caradet and the Iceteen, the Saradominist force that followed. The Praetorian was out doing the scouting. He was the one who came across them, ported back to the fortress, and was asked to evacuate the civilians of the fort, so kind of the soldiers' families and all that kind of thing. His name's Titus. He was given a mysterious gem by Trindine and asked to protect it and deliver it to Azanadra. This is something quite interesting. I was not expecting this tie-in. It's the Shadow Diamond. If you remember during Desert Treasure,
yep,
there are four diamonds. One of them is the Shadow Diamond, protected by a warrior of darkness called Damis.
Yep.
And the last reveal of this Shadowfall mystery is that Titus is Titus Damis. So something happened. He was given the Shadow Diamond to deliver to Azanadra by Trindine. And something happened to him, and he ended up protecting it in that manner, so that whenever you went to resurrect Azanadra, you had to defeat him to take it off him. So there's a tie-in to a very old quest now from this site.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really satisfying little ending to that one.
Yeah,
like,
and
my
eye kind of perked up when this happened, because, you know, going all the way back to this, killing Damis, I remember, is one of the hardest ones in Desert Treasure to kill. Back all the way back then in April of 2005.
Bloody hell.
And you know, this is, in my view, when the Zaros lore kicked into high gear. I knew it was happening before then, but I think it was after Desert Treasure that everybody jumped on the bandwagon.
I honestly can't remember. I played it quite a while ago. But yeah, that was similar to the tie-in with Temple of Ikov with the Stormguard lore.
Yep.
It's nice to get the callbacks to older stories and just bringing it into relevance.
And hey,
I don't know what happened. Go for it.
Good to know that the old quests haven't been forgotten.
Yeah, and they're still kind of relevant to the current stories as well. It's nice to hear that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Titus between him taking the diamonds and what happened to him in Desert Treasure. I think there is some lore that fills that in. I believe it might be kind of related to the short stories that have been published since then, but I'm not particularly familiar with those. So yeah, go on the wiki and look him up, and there must be something in there to fill it in. But yeah, there's your link. That is Shadowfall. The other one you find in here is Decimation. Which the logs written by the prefect of the fort. And this is what I was saying about the red herring. I assumed the prefect was Azanadra's ally, as in it was Trindine. It's not, it's someone else. She's Livia Drusilla. So yeah, the praetor and the prefect are two different people. And yeah, again, exactly the same time period, but a different perspective. Now, what's her view of what's happened here? She was told that Zaris would be visiting, but it turned out to be at Trindin and Azanadra. And it was Azanadra coming to tell her that Zaris is dead. So breaking some pretty horrible news to her. So this, you know, Zaroshian loyalist. He went on to warn the other forts and left Trindin and her guard behind to help kind of protect the fort. When the prefect broke this news to the, you know, her soldiers here, the demon tried to assassinate her. So the demon was working with Zamorak.
And which makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Because obviously quite a lot of the demons did side with Zamorak in the end, because especially the Avernic demons, because that was his deal he made with them. If they fought with him during his rebellion, he would then fight with them in their rebellion on Infernus. And he did, and that was the deal they struck.
And I just want to talk about this area before we move on to the mystery here. This is part of where you can get the spear as well. Normally you can get the spear anywhere during Pylon Hour, but it's this area here in the Praetorium where you can get the spear at any time. If you're excavating, have a small chance of getting it.
I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's what you find in the Praetorium. Again, like, the layers of the story just keep building and keep building.
Yeah, and once again, there's more rooms in here. There's even a trap door, which we'll talk about later, amongst other things, and an actual door.
If you examine the trap door, it says, contains future content. No, wait, it's empty.
Oh, it's good to see that examine wit back.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's all there.
You've got to love seeing the funny examine text.
And then the banners in here also have variant symbols of Zaros, which, you know, you can see those if you examine it as well. And, you know, this is just an example of archaeology done right, as we have always wanted things to be done with examine infos and whatnot.
Yeah, it's always nice when you have a little text like that.
Yeah.
So that's all we get in the interior thing. I'm going to head down to the prison next.
All right.
Once you've done that first puzzle, you can head down a very big and dramatic set of stairs to a kind of ruined set of corridors. That was basically, yeah, the prison of the fort.
Yeah.
There's cell a door, which is obviously a pun on cellar door down here, which is a bit of research. Which tells you that this is an area of the fort usually used to temporarily hold lawbreakers. The team suggests that various magical legatus and pontifex barriers could be passed through if you hold or wear the correct artifact. So this is giving you the clues of how to get through the barriers. You have to pick up certain artifacts and restore them. And it's an amulet.
Yeah,
a ring.
It is the... let me just go to the tool belt and grab that, because this is actually something they patched in after archaeology launched. It is the Pontifex Signet Ring and the Legatus Pendant.
Yeah, because they go on the tool belt now, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's, you can find them down here. And there's also a very small mystery called Time Served, where you find one of the timepieces, restore it, and use it with the cell controller in the north. And that unlocks the high security area of the prison. So you pop through another door and go into a third area.
Which is where the real action will take place at the end.
Yes, yes, this is where things kick off. But there's one mystery before things kick off, which is the Forgotten Prisoner. And here you find a very strange device that you can interact with, and you can talk to it. And turns out this is what happened to the demon that tried to assassinate the leader of the force.
Yeah, I absolutely enjoyed this one upon uncovering it.
It's a very interesting little mystery, isn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, you're going through this thing and you're not expecting to find anything. And it's this inanimate object that effectively has, I guess, I don't know, would you call it a soul of the demon? I don't know if demons have souls, but that's kind of how I took it.
The way they talk about it is that it's a demonic projection from Pandemonium. So it's not the demon's body. It's kind of, I guess maybe their soul. I don't know whether demons actually have souls, but they imprisoned...
Hey, that's rude.
Well, I don't know, because souls are a genuine concept in RuneScape, and I don't know whether demons actually have that, depending on, you know, how they can, how souls are written. I genuinely don't know. Because I know some things don't. I know the Anima Knights don't have souls. Telos and Solak and Virago, they definitely don't.
Actually, they do have souls, because that's what you get when you're collecting post 99 Slayer. You kill an Abyssal Demon, you can get an Abyssal Demon soul.
Oh, they must do then. How about that? Shows how much Slayer I do. But yeah, you talk to the device and it turns out it's the Seaman. You answer its questions correctly, and if you've been paying attention to the various lore books and lore drops you've had previously, you can give the correct answers. This is Zilgar Trog. He's here for treason. He's been in prison for so long. Da, da, da. Once you've reminded him of who he is, he can then talk to you lucidly. And you kind of arrange a pseudo-contract where if you free him by moving his soul or whatever to a portable phylactery, he will then help you out somehow. And that second half of the deal hasn't quite been worked out yet.
Nope. Portable phylactery sitting in my bank.
So yeah, you've got a bottle of demon in your bank that owes you a massive favor. So how's that going to turn out later down the line, I wonder?
I don't know. And, you know, that's one of the big questions that's left with this dig site, right?
It's part of it. It's one of the mysteries. It's obvious, I think it's something that's going to be built on later, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite an intriguing little mystery here, and it's nice to actually meet some of the characters that have been talked about in all the logs so far. So you've got the Samarakan demon in a bottle now as well.
Yeah, it says once thrown at, when you throw it at a group of enemies, the demon would steal a host and set upon the rest. And they said this the slang term for them was Diabolus.
So yeah, that's the tooltip for the portable phylactery. In your artifact journal thing. Yeah, each containing a demon soul. So that's quite a cool little weapon.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the last time we saw one of these was the Halloween event in 2018 with death and whatnot.
We did.
And now they come back in archaeology as well. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, makes sense that you would excavate that from the ancient magic munitions, right?
Yes, yes, very much so.
The way you did that there, moving from the ancient magic munitions area into this area where you need that portable phylactery. Well done.
It's almost like I planned this.
Yeah.
Next up is the vault. And this is where the story's been leading. All the way through the site and all the way through these excavations, you've been collecting spell scrolls.
Yep.
And there's been these buttons on the walls. It's very similar to the ones that you see to open the prison door. So if you cast the spell scroll on the button, you can then enter the vault. And if you just bear with me for 30 seconds while I try and find a way into it.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I will also say with this is that, you know, you enter the vault the first time, you can only access one specific quadrant of it, like the north quadrant, the west quadrant, the south quadrant, or the east quadrant. And you need to find the different buttons throughout the entire dig site in order to access it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that is interesting when you think about it. And, you know, I have to say that if you thought you were going to have a puzzle with the lighthouse in Everlight, I think this is the biggest puzzle in all of archaeology. Because what's the first level that you could go in here and start unpacking this? I think it's somewhere in the 60s or 70s where you can start
like
the vault.
That.
I think I only have one of the vault puzzles done. I think the last three quadrants come down pretty late, but the first one comes
at 58.
Yeah, pretty soon. Yeah.
They're 58, 86, 100, and 107.
So yeah, this is a long-running mystery, and you come back to it again and again as your levels increase. And it's quite a difficult puzzle. I found it quite difficult.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I couldn't tell you how to solve it right now. If you ask,
I would have to go back to the wiki to look it out. I think I maybe brute forced it to start with, and then eventually figured out a strategy. Yep.
Same.
But which fits with the area. This is meant to be the highest security vaults in this very big secret fortress. There's meant to be things of very, very dangerous and powerful artifacts down here.
Yeah, and did you know that after you finish the mystery, you can teleport back between the areas using these buttons between the prison, chapel, kitchens, and praetorium?
Yeah, it's quite good. Quite interesting, isn't it? Well, quite useful, isn't it?
It's almost the same thing as the little agility shortcuts when you enter, say, Everlight. But, you know, this area has this, of course, too. So I guess this is just something a little bit extra on the top. Yes. So
it's nice, isn't it? And also, each time you solve one of these four quadrant puzzles, you pick up another bit of Trindine's log. So here, finally, after seeing her mentioned a few times, you get Trindine's voice coming through and what her account of everything is. Whenever the demons attacked, basically she came down here to seal the vault and to protect the artifacts that were hidden down here because they were very dangerous and they couldn't be allowed to fall into their enemy's hand. She also tells you in the first log that the code for the vault is the same as the prison. So there's your callback to an earlier puzzle. And that the vault is so far hidden in the Shadow Realm that she only expects Sliske to come to find her.
Are we at that point yet where we should talk about that, or should we just move on a tiny bit more before we talk about what you just said and what that could potentially mean?
Let's wait a little bit. Okay. Let's get this ministry finished up.
Sirion and Tanis are probably scratching their heads at this point.
Mm-hmm. She also talks a little more about what the vault is. It's the vaults of Hereditas, which it's a place where powerful and dangerous relics are held here, away from the Empire's capital, including the Shadow Diamond, which she actually tells you what it is. Turns out it's the soul gem of a Majorat who was powerful with shadow magic. So it's not actually a diamond. It's, you know, one of the crystals that are in their forehead. It's one of their soul gems.
And it makes sense with the power that was projected when we put all four of them together at the end of Desert Treasure.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what the other ones are.
Yeah.
Are they also Majorat soul gems?
I would guess. You know, and the question at that point is who? Because there's only a set number of Majorat, right, that are left.
Yeah, there were only about... there were a couple of hundred to start with, and then after Tumaken killed them, there were only about 100 left.
Yeah.
So there aren't many of them at all.
Is this also setting us up for Desert Treasure 2 at some point?
It might be. It might be. Although this could be the equivalent of Desert Treasure 2.
Yeah. Might not be called that, but you know.
You know, it's a very similar, you know, theme of the quest. You're uncovering a new Majorat in the desert. This could be what Desert Treasure 2 turned into. But yeah, so she wanted the Shadow Diamond or this soul gem to be delivered to Asanadra by Titus, but feared it might corrupt him. And you can kind of see that in Titus's account. Right at the end of it, he gets really angry and he gets really resentful towards Asanadra and the other Majorat. So maybe it did corrupt him. You know, there's still that mystery of what actually happened to him after all these events happened.
I wonder.
Yes. She suspected that some of her guard might be part of Orcus's cult, and that's been mentioned in some of the other logs previously, but she wasn't herself. And I really like the voice they've given Trindine in this one. She says, oh, bloody necromance. Like, yeah, she's a bit sassy. She's a bit sharp.
You can imagine some kind of, I don't know, I imagine some kind of snappy British voice with that one.
Yeah. She seems quite sarcastic and very dry. Kind of, you know, compare her to Sliske, who is the other, you know, shadow mage that we've had so far, who's a very theatrical, over-the-top.
The jester.
Performer, jester, clown. And then she's a lot more, she seems far sharper and far more, I want to say almost acidic, that kind of thing, which is a lovely contrast. And I very much like the voice they picked for her.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it, I think.
Once you've had a look at all these logs and you've kind of developed her character a bit through these these pages and you've unlocked all the doors, you get to access the vault. You get to access this little gold box in the center of the vault. And you can find a shadow engrammeter, which is very similar to the engrammeter you pick up through the Marjorat Memories mini quest.
Oh boy.
Yep, now you see where we're going, right?
Yeah. And you go charge that up in the usual way with divine energy through divination. And then you come back here and use it and you pick up Trindine's memory. Okay. Take that to Azanadra, say, what's this all about? He'll transcribe it for you. Turns out she's still alive. She's hidden in the Shadow Realm. She's been staying there all this time to preserve her energy and to kind of pass the time until someone can come in there and free her. So here's this is the finale, almost. This is the build-up of the entire site. You've then got to go get Trindine back. And you find her hidden deep in the Shadow Realm, and obviously because you've got Sisko's gift, you can actually access the Shadow Realm. You find her in a kind of semi-withered state because she wasn't present at the final ritual in Children of Mar, which gave them a permanent boon, and they no longer wither. And she initially mistakes you for Sliske.
Is that a hint to what happens at the end of Sliske's endgame?
Possibly.
Also Desperate Measures. Possibly. And Desperate Shadow Measures. Anima.
She, and it initially thinks that, yeah, it's Sliske come to get her.
Now you have to ask, and you know, I don't know if anybody's asked this yet. Is this because she was expecting somebody with sole access to the Shadow Realm, Sliske, to do that? Or is it because of what happened in Sliske's endgame?
I think it's both. I think it's a mix of both. Maybe she looked at the World Guardian, and or maybe she felt whatever was coming closer, because we know that Marjorat have this way of sensing each other.
Yeah, kind of like a sixth sense, it's almost like
a telepathic sense. They can kind of sense each other's presence. So maybe she felt whatever's left of Sliske that's in the World Guardian coming closer. Or maybe she was expecting Sliske because no one else can access the Shadow Realm that deep. I possibly think it's both.
I'm leaning towards the fact that it's definitely got to be something to do with what happened in Sliske's endgame and all the shadowy stuff, we'll just say.
Shadowy shenanigans.
Yeah, because when you think about it, that all happened on its own. And then we took it, we weren't expecting it to go this way in Desperate Measures, right? And it did. And do you really think that they would just make one quest about that? Or is it saying that, hey, this is going to be kind of the direction that we go? And keep in mind, consider that when archaeology launched, there was no intent at that point at this year to develop the Orthon dig site. It was intended that this mystery would be the last mystery of the archaeology skill, at least for now, in terms of how it was designed.
See, if you'd asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said that it's probably just a once-off. But now they've kind of shown that they want to include story, and they want to include a big overarching story that joins updates together and provides a consistent set of themes and references throughout sequential updates. I think this is probably all planned and all tying in for a reason that we haven't quite got to yet.
And you know, they said they have the whole next year plus of narrative plans, so it would make sense with that. If you talk to Trindine after you complete the mystery, she says that as Anandra has explained the situation and she's going to come to terms with it eventually, she's going to remain here and she's not ready for what awaits her above. And she's also been informed of your place, the World Guardian's place, in terms of how things are going with everything that's going on. And your player says that, you know, you look a lot better than when I first found you. And it turns out that Azanandra actually rejuvenated her somehow. And she says that she feels like she's just left one of their sacrificial rituals, and the discussion ends right there.
Yeah, so yeah, when you basically whenever you find her, Azanadra comes down, they have a chat. He kicks the player out so they can have a private chat. And then when you talk to her again, she's kind of back to normal and back to her usual unwithered self. I think it's quite interesting how Azanadra's the one who rejuvenates her. Because
yeah.
there's been some hints and some implication in, I think, at the end of Children of Mar especially, that Azanadra is very, very close to godhood at the moment.
That's the sense that I got, and this is what I thought when I first read this as well.
Yeah, because him using his power in that way strikes me as something that a Majorette wouldn't normally do. So I wonder how close he is to actual ascension at this stage.
I don't know, and you have to wonder what would be needed for that, and what exactly is his goal with bringing Trindine back, rejuvenating her on that.
I think it makes sense because there aren't many Majorette left, and he does seem fond of her. Like the way he talks about her at the start, he misses her dearly, is the phrase he uses. Like there does seem to be some warmth there. So it kind of makes sense that he would want her to be rejuvenated and to survive in the way that the others have survived. And you've got to remember that the Majorette have changed dramatically since Children of Mar because they no longer have to kill each other to survive.
I mean, they don't need the ritual.
They don't need the ritual anymore. So what's that going to do to them as people? Now they no longer have to be at each other's throats. So how are their dynamics going to change? I mean, there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered yet.
And unfortunately, we don't have any answers for those at this point.
Not at this stage, no.
And, you know, I think where we were supposed to get these answers was in the what was that quest called they wanted to do this year, the Centistan one?
They wanted to do Centistan. That apparently has become something else. I wonder if it's been morphed into this site.
No, it was supposed to be
the City of Centistan.
Yeah, the City of Centistan quest was supposed to be after Archaeology launched.
I've heard that's not been cancelled, but it's changed into something else.
Yeah.
But I wonder what that's going to be like and what that will involve. It probably will involve Trindine.
Yeah, it has to at that point. I mean, and you know, I think it makes total sense that we'll still get something on this vein, because when you think about it, you don't start your narrative lore skill of the game at Caridat and end it at Caridat, you know, at 118 archaeology, only to have it, you know, not continued in some grand way. It's very clear to me from the way that the skill was designed, the way the mysteries were designed, that this dig site, Caridat, was supposed to springboard off into something else. And, you know, it'll just be a question of when that arrives.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of implication that there is going to be more here. We're going to come back here and we're going to find out more about various things. So I think you're right.
Yeah, and you know, it's a little bit different than the Karapak and Dragonkin bent that we've been on for the rest of this year. So I can see why that, you know, we're not necessarily moving on to that right away. So They did say that Elder God Wars dungeon will come out at some point in 2021. We don't know what the next quest in this series is going to be. We do know that the next quest that comes out will be Violet is Blue 2 for the Christmas quest this year. Yes.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm excited for that. I love that quest.
Yeah, it was a good Christmas.
It was very cute.
And you know, we're all going to be needing that this year, of course.
Yeah. So, give me the John Lewis quest. Love it.
But, you know, back to Caridat, sorry for the diversion on that. I think that when you start summing up this site, it's very clear that it all builds up to this. And you can kind of see, you know, that there are people going about their regular thing on the top side and whatnot in the kitchens and in the chapel. Then, of course, when you head down to the Praetorian War Room, it starts to kind of shift and provide hints that we are heading in this direction, as well as when you talk to the various ghost figures out there. And then at the end, you get into the vault and you do this mystery. It effectively tees off the next lore endeavor. And, you know, I don't know. Did you feel satisfied after this?
Yes. I felt that the story for this, I was really impressed by the story structure for this site. I feel like it's concise, it's neat, it's self-consistent, and it all comes together in a really great way. There's very few kind of irritating loose ends. There's a few open questions, but they felt natural and they feel like spring bouncing off points for new stories. The actual core of this site, which is finding as an address loyalist, comes together in a really great way. I like it a lot. And that's not just because I'm a big fan of Trindade.
Yeah, of course. That's also true. Of course. All right. I don't know that I have much else left to say on this. Sirion, Tanis, what did you guys think coming into this and, you know, seeing that we're going to wind up in this situation here where we're going to uncover this ancient Majrat in the vault?
I think it's cool. Like, it's really... well, it's impactful. Like, it's an impactful piece of lore, I'd say.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely going to have... Some of the sites have a lot of impact, or are going to have a lot of impact on the game, and some of them don't. And I feel like this is going to be one of the bigger ones.
You know, now that we've talked about the core five that were launched in-game, biggest? I think it has to be this one, right?
In terms of potential future consequences.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say yes.
Well, at least Slisky's still dead. That's good. I was getting nervous while you... I was starting to get a little nervous. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no.
He's still around. He's lurking in the background, as always, doing his thing. It's nice to have Trindade back. It's good to have... Yeah, good to have another character like that around.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the biggest shock for me... you know, when I was doing this first vault mystery here at the end, I had to, you know, just take a moment when she identified me as Sliske.
Like, uh oh.
It's like, here we go again. What is this? And, you know, I think that that's where we leave this dig site. I think. I don't know. Where would you guys rate this in terms of being your favorites?
Oh, it's difficult. It's a difficult one. Because each site to me has different strengths. I feel like this has one of the strongest stories.
Yeah, I'd agree.
The atmosphere is fantastic. I love the feel of it. And the reverence and the age. Music's wonderful, obviously. And I don't know. I don't know why it's not my favorite. My favorite, I think, is Everlight because of the visuals for it. I think that one is the prettiest one, and I think that one just marks it above the others for me.
Interesting.
But again, this is another seriously good bit of environmental storytelling and bringing, you know, combining story and skilling. In a really cool and engaging way. Like I love it. I really love it.
Yeah. I think graphically for me, I have to go with Everlight. I don't know if you guys agree with that one. But story wise, you know, for me, it's a hard choice between, this one and probably the Infernal Source.
Oh yeah. The Source. Yeah. The Source is another visually beautiful one as well, isn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, story wise,
so it's
so
for
the
hard
Source.
To pick between them.
Yeah. Story-wise, for the source of this, hell, I'll put Caridad at the top with this.
Yeah,
yeah, for now. And you know, this is of course completely throwing Orthyn out the window because we haven't looked at the lore of Orthyn. I know Orthyn is one of the most visually stunning. It's probably tied at the top with Everlight for me. But that's of course a topic for the encore segment of the Lore Diggers here. So. But yeah, that's Caridad. First dig site, you start at level 5, finish at 118. Overall, very satisfying, I feel. I very much enjoyed the little reveal at the end. And when it came down to it, you know, it didn't seem that important at the beginning. Important's not the right word. It didn't seem that impactful at the beginning. But as we ramp it up, I think it definitely becomes more and more important. So I'm very pleased with that. Anybody have anything else before we move on to the cherry on top of the initial archaeology launch?
No, I think that was really clear.
Okay. So, Tanis, Sirion, have you guys got Guildmaster yet?
No.
I do.
Okay. Well, after you get 99 and you have Guildmaster, there's something else for you to do. Something else for you to do. And it involves going back to a number of dig sites out there and finding some writing on the wall.
You don't just need Guildmaster, you need the full Master Archaeology outfit as well.
Yeah.
Don't you need Guildmaster to buy the outfit?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I was inferring there, but yeah, you do need the full Master Archaeology outfit, and you find little chunks of writing on the wall in a number of, actually, all of the dig sites minus Orthon, because this was before Orthon came out, and things start to get very interesting, don't they?
Yeah, so you find these mysterious glowing symbols on the wall. You suddenly start noticing them, and they look like the whole squares that you get on the monolith. So you can have a look at them. And each one is a short bit of research, so you send your research team out to decipher it. And they tell a little story. I've got the wiki up here, so we'll just read that one out. So the first one you find at Caradet, and it says, "This is where they began, surviving remnants of the Inquisition. They lived among their enemies, vying for power and status. Their leader is unknown to us. Their agents thwart us at every turn. Even what little we know came at a cost."
The Inquisition.
Surviving it's so ambiguous. Are they the remnants of the Inquisition, or did they survive the remnants of the Inquisition? Who is
nobody
they?
Expects? Who nobody expects the Zerosian Inquisition.
But it's not Zerosian. Just wait. If you go to the one at Everlight, it says here
who
they.
Is they? Who is we? Who is? Oh, the next one's at the Infernal Source.
Okay. You do that one, and I got Everlight teed up for when you're ready.
You go for Everlight, yeah. So the one at the Source says, "The cult taught them how to blend into the shadows, not just to survive, but to thrive, to bribe and coerce, to puppet leaders. While their methods appear nefarious, there is evidence of them being used for good, yet their goals remain inscrutable to us."
Like, what? What is this?
Sounds like there is an entire shadow organization running the entire world. That's what it sounds like.
All right, head up. Everlight next.
And the Everlight one is underground in the sunken pyramid, not in the water part, but at the end of that hallway. And you know, when you get there and before you are 105 archaeology and you're wondering what is at the end of this hallway where the rock pile is, that's where you find the next piece of writing. "Here they learn to walk in the light, to manipulate the events of history in their favor, and to benefit from such. They seek to control the narrative of the past, present, and future. They stand among us, hidden in plain sight."
Yeah, that there is like a shadow mob. The Cambridge mob! It's the Cambridge mob!
Wait, we got more. I want to do Warforged, so you do Stormguard.
All right, got it. Oh, I got to get.
That's you. Next one, Stormguard. That's you.
All right, I got to get to Stormguard to find that one. I was in game doing it. Is there an easier way to? Is it in my journal?
It might be. I don't think it is. Oh, never mind. I'll do both of them then.
Okay.
It says the Stormguard one is, "They stole power from everywhere, confiscated and hoarded it, much like in the Inquisition, but rarely used it, lest they give away their existence. With it, they have done both good and ill, saved lives, killed tyrants, but they seek not justice. Their aims are their own. You should not trust them."
So says Geonon.
Oh, God!
And then the final one. "They are neither war nor peace, order nor chaos. They are what falls between the cracks, the power behind the throne, the silent watchers. They are the silhouette that, once seen, cannot be unseen. They are the shadows of the Empire. Their eyes are upon you, player. be vigilant.
I had a massive WTF moment there. I was like,
yeah.
How dare you not telling me what comes after this? How dare you? I was mad.
You don't love it when your player gets called out by name.
Yeah. I, oh my goodness, like reading this, there is...
The theory is that the sign on the archaeology icon, the sign on the monolith, is the sign of the Inquisitors.
But what are the Inquisitors? Who is they? Who is we?
Like I said, I have the feeling that there's this shadow organization. Like, everything we see is but a mere front of this organization. They are the puppet masters of all the leaders in Gilenor. They basically run the entire world. There's this.
But who would it be?
The Illuminati.
Who would it be? That's a good question.
You say that about the symbols. I remember the archaeology concept art features this symbol quite prominently. Yeah. You remember there's the woman who's reaching forward for the artifact, and she has it tattooed on her wrist. In a really prominent place. It's like, okay, this is important. So what is it? Who are these people? I'm absolutely stumped, and I cannot wait to find out who.
I mean, what does an Inquisition do? The Inquisition gets rid of stuff, right? Like, that's what Inquisitions do, and I wonder if this talks about, you know, maybe all the hints, all the information about this group was literally scrapped out of history. Deleted.
What?
Well, of course it would be.
And that is maybe what that Inquisition refers to. But
yeah, you know. I think you're onto something with that, Sirion. That makes more sense to me, because this is kind of having a real, like, Masonic kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
You know? The Illuminati!
Well, you remember also that when this whole thing started, and this was in another one of the cutscenes that you can't see now, Guildmaster Tony got sucked in to the monolith.
Yeah, Guildmaster Tony showed a black stone to the monolith and got sucked into it.
Welp.
That's that mystery still needs sorting out.
Yeah, I was hoping that we would solve that with the writings on the wall, and then they drop this bloody bombshell on you, and they're like,
"No."
Also, enjoy the rest of your game.
Also, it's not just the person, not just the person in the archaeology launch art. If you look at Assistant Rainer, she also has one of those tattoos.
I mean, if this organization is related to the monolith, then it would make sense that they want to be close to what's happening. And yeah, I mean, to me, this sounds like an amazing, like, storyline. This sounds like a Da Vinci Code, like, quest line that we're going to explore at some point, where we're going to try and figure out about this secret organization. And, you know, it sounds very interesting to me. I'm very curious to see how this is going to go. And how does this relate to all the other events in the world, right? Like, how...
It's a complete puzzle, isn't it?
I'd like to just take a moment and point out something that has been a question that was never answered in any of the archaeology dig sites. We thought we might have an answer with it in Everlight Time Sprites. And then also the cosmic focus that you get from Orthyn that brings those time sprites further forward. So the theory that I have on this is that when you remember that little bit of lore that you got about from the Saren chunk of the Yak Track?
Yes.
About how there was some other group out there that was watching, so to speak, watching the Elder Eggs. It almost seemed like there was an extra group of Elder gods out there that we weren't aware of. And that's kind of what it was inferring, is that we were talking about the Elder Gods then, so it was natural in that piece of lore to assume that they were talking about another set of Elder Gods. But what if in that lore chunk in the Karapak track from Saren, what's actually being referred to as the Inquisitors? What if we're looking
the
at
the eldest gods?
No, no. What if they're just some non-corporeal entity that is taking issue with all the revisions of what the elder gods have been doing? And what if it's them, this, the Inquisitors, who we're gonna have to work with to put a stop to what the elder gods are up to?
I'm gonna be honest. I like that answer less than there just being a big spy organization running the entire world. But that's very personal because I'm sort of fed up with all the magical, supernatural explanations of things.
Yeah.
Like, I find it quite kind of exciting that, okay, sure, there's magic involved because we have to, these writings are clearly magical, but, you know, a less supernatural explanation to me sounds very refreshing and interesting and more intriguing than, you know, explaining this away with yet another power that we don't know about.
True. And
but very personal.
And then the question would be, what kind of organization out there has the power to pull themselves through time to the point where we can't even see them?
Yeah, that's
they
a good
really
question.
Are, aren't you?
I wonder if what it's got to do with the Dragonkin. Because they've been around since forever. And they have access to older artifacts.
Perhaps it's one of the Dragonkin factions we didn't know about before.
Maybe it's the Augra.
Hmm.
Because I know the Dragonkin have been around. They've been mentioned in Second Age lore.
They're old.
They are old. They have been around since the beginning of time, literally. And, you know, ignoring Karapak shenanigans, they have, especially now Orthon's been released, they are kind of neutral in some ways. But then that kind of discounts the whole thing. I'm kind of spitballing here, thinking off the top of my head. Kind of discounts the whole thing with the Stone of Jazz, but yeah, I'm absolutely intrigued
there's
by
also,
this. Absolutely.
There's also the thought that it could be that the Inquisitors could be agents of Wen, because we have dealt very little with Wen as an elder god.
That would make sense because this artifact is quite clearly hers.
Yeah,
in the way that
the monolith, of course, you're talking about.
Yeah, the monolith is obviously.
And you know, they never said that, but the concept art is clearly taking an inspiration from Wen in terms of the coloring and the nature around it. And one of the Wen symbols that you can see, it's kind of like a diamond. So the Inquisitors could have a slightly different symbol than Wen has. So, you know, while we're talking about all these potential options out there, I think perhaps the simplest thing and perhaps the
so what is the
easiest one
the,
out there is that the Inquisitors are agents of Wen.
Each of the elder gods is aligned with a feeling concept. What is it?
Like a
domain. Domain, that's the word.
Aspect of creation. They each represent a different aspect of creation. I think we talked about this a bit on the last one.
What's Wen's?
Let's get this up again. RS3, Wen. I think this was actually one of the nibbles from the last,
yeah, it was.
Time I was on.
It was. I'm fairly certain it was.
So Wen is inversion.
Inversion. Huh.
Which, when you think about it, a group who can pull themselves through time and make themselves invisible are effectively inverting themselves.
I guess, yeah. I think
tinfoil hat identifies, intensifies. Yeah.
I think Agents of Wen sounds likely, especially with the whole tattoo thing and you've got this diamond symbol running all the way through it.
And then they.
But that's got to tie in the whole Elder God situation we're dealing with right now, right?
What if it was set up as an insurance policy by Wen to ensure that nothing crazy happens?
Well, Wen's interesting because it's implied that she's the one who killed Mar. Well, not killed Mar, but who hurt Mar and corrupted her. So Wen might be up to something. But it's very difficult to kind of comprehend that because the Elder Gods don't think the way we do. They are aliens in a very major way. So it's quite hard to try and understand how they think. But yeah, lots of questions. And, you know,
also, if you go back to when the Elder Gods were first mentioned, the only Elder Gods that were mentioned when they first put out a piece of Elder God concept art years ago, and we later learned that Ma and Wen were Elder Gods, were the only ones we actually saw doing stuff in the cutscene were in terms of when they were creating the planets. I forget where that came from. I think it was probably Desperate Times. Was Jazz, Full, and Bic. Wen was conspicuously absent from that cutscene.
That was from the History of Gyllenor YouTube video, I think, from ages ago. Yeah,
that's where that was. And you also have to keep in mind that when we're talking about Wen, this is also the Oracle quest, which goes back years as well.
Oracle, yeah. And also Wen is associated with the needle.
Which we know
that would make sense with the time sprites.
The whole thing with the needle is that it's used to unpick mistakes in time, so they can go back and fix them.
Which it sounds like
when I say they, I mean the Elder Gods. When they're creating something, the needle is used to correct mistakes.
And then why would you need the Inquisitors for that? Well, you'd probably want the Inquisitors to handle, I guess, the lesser important ones that the Elder God didn't want to?
Maybe. Oh, I don't know. This whole thing is just kind of, I thought when I finished Caradet, I'm going to put RuneScape down. I'm going to not do it for a while. And then they drop this. And I'm like, I want to know what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got me. And of course there's Orthanc as well, but yeah, God, good questions asking here. And great curveball, really great curveball.
And, you know, it just raises more questions than we thought we had answers to at the end of Caridat. And I don't really have anything else to say on this, and I don't have any further ideas. What I'd really like to do is establish an all-encompassing player lore council and have a discussion on this at some point, because I think if we put some people together, we would be able to come up with something on this. But
I want to corner Mod Jack at the pub and, you know, drink until he tells me what's going on.
Do you think that's been done though? Like that's written, or is it just open?
I wonder if it's been written. I think it might be.
They have the next year worth planned out really well, and the next 5 years of lore story points planned to a bullet point kind of thing. So I would say yes.
It must be already planned out. Oh, it's from someone who plays games for story, it's so good to finally get big overarching story content in RuneScape.
As long as we don't take it to the nth degree, turn it into another world shaking calamity. You know what I mean
You know what I mean? It's so nice just to have content that digs into this and actually has a really good lore backing. Like it feels so good to have this kind of stuff again.
Well, I mean, had we not had to deal with the whole Elder Gods line of things, you could have still had this story and it would still have been good. You know what I mean? It might not be Agents of Wind, but it could have been some other secret, you know, society. It could be more like a Therion type vision of, like, and it would have still worked. Maybe even better. I mean, I don't know.
There's also the theory that the monolith is an elder artifact, which could be why Zaros was interested in it.
I think it's fairly clear that it is some sort of elder artifact. I think it's either the Codex or the Hammer. I think it's the Codex.
Yeah. Remind me what the Hammer does.
I don't actually know.
Okay. And, you know,
from the way...
How disappointing.
I'm sorry.
there's a reason. There's a reason why they sent, in addition to the 120 cape, they sent out a monolith.
Of course, you've got one, haven't you?
Yeah, I have one.
You've got a monolith. I keep forgetting.
Yeah. And inside of it was a bunch of archaeology data in the form of concept art. And, I mean, if you really want to take the extrapolation on that, you would have to assume that the monolith that we have here has extra stuff inside of it in addition to the relics, perhaps. But perhaps that's
how you're using it in terms of you're getting powers from it. Like that to me, that fits Codex, like a store, something that's storing information and storing data. You're giving it artifacts in exchange for powers. You're giving it powerful things. You're giving it magical artifacts.
Yeah, because you look at the monolith right now. There's nothing like it that's a hammer.
Yeah, it's not hammer strikes me as kind of you're forging something. It's, you know, a creation.
Yeah.
An aggressive, powerful artifact creation. This strikes me as more of a, storage and a repository of stuff. So, Codex, I think.
All right. I think I can leave that there. I don't have anything else left to add on this. So you guys good to move on to the actual update of the week?
Good to go.
I'm good. And I'm very impressed that I kept that to under 2 hours.
Thank you. Thank you. Also, nobody swear at this point because my timer has stopped. So I don't know what we're at for time-wise here.
We've done about an hour and a half.
So we could end up with the five-hour episode.
We're not doing a five-hour episode. My flatmate will kill me.
Okay. Moving on then. This week also we have an achievement rework in the form of not new achievements, but a back-end update to the achievement system. So much so that all of the achievements in-game had to be rewritten and retested to ensure that they would function as expected. They said they had to tweak over 1,165 files, and this was a project that was going on since last Christmas. And the benefit...
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of salt going on about, you know, things being slightly broken, and...
Yeah.
You know, I work in tech, and I know that rebuilding systems, sometimes without any visual difference for the end user, is a massive, massive piece of work. And I can only imagine what has gone on behind the scenes. And all in all, it went pretty smoothly, right? Like, they didn't have to do any rollbacks and all that stuff. So, I think it's... I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with the achievement system from this, because if it becomes really easy to add new achievements, it's
That's what they're saying. They're saying it's easier than ever with that. And, you know, a lot of the scripting that they had previously was really expensive to run. And they also added new categories with this. The categories right now are skills, exploration, area tasks, which are your task diaries, combat, lore, activities, completionists, and grace, along with various subcategories for it as well. I'm really glad to see that the area tasks have been split out into their own thing, because this makes it really easy to find, you know, where your tasks set stuff is. Because, you know, previously you'd go to the Lumbridge tasks and you would just have, you know, a whole boatload of tasks that really weren't necessary for the achievement diary, but were still in here. So
yeah,
I'm glad about that. Lore-wise, always good to see those split apart. And they actually have a mini-quest category, which has achievements for each of the mini-quests in it, believe it or not. I am actually very thankful for this, that I have completed 10 out of 10 of the ARC mini-quests. I thought I had more left to do, but oh my god, I'm glad that's done.
Yay.
Missing some combat post-quest ones as well. Chompy birds. I've only killed 5 out of 4,000. Yeah, that's going to be
Oh, Christ, 4,000.
That's for comp. That's why we don't talk about that.
Oh, right, fair.
But overall, I mean, this is I think this was something that they needed to do. And, you know, even if you look at the archaeology achievements, they split those out based on category. They split the farming achievements out based on manor farm and Anachronia, which you can tell that I haven't actually done much of the breeding log over there at Anachronia, because I've only got 1 out of 16 and 14 out of 30 at Manor Farm. So you can tell that the 200 mil farming cap has been a bottleneck for me, that I didn't want to do the achievements on that. And, you know, I think we just need to talk about a couple things before we move on from this, that they closed down the full comparison thing where you could compare achievements between people. They said it's been poorly performing since the achievement system began to hit its operation limits, so that it will remain disabled until they've resolved this problem. And as well, the archaeology contribution, discovery, donation, research, and restoration chain achievements do not trigger a pop-up or a chat message on completion. Though they are missing, you'll still be able to complete the achievements. And then once you completed these achievements, your rune score will not update automatically, and you'll need to relog for this. They say due to the nature of these bugs, they are unlikely to be resolved until into the new year. And this is a discussion that Sirion and I had this week. I said, you know, this is a big update and this is a good update, but you're not going to delay something like this until the new year for these kind of bugs. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, like the thing is, basically what you have at this point is they had to re-implement all the achievements. So any achievements that were created in the last year needed to be built both in the old and the new system, right? And this is going to go on no matter how long. Like, if you keep using the old system until you have all the bugs out of the new system, it's going to keep getting more expensive because all the achievements you keep building twice. So it's an art to find the right time where you say, okay, we're flipping the switch, so we don't have to maintain the old one anymore. And you know, this is always a long source of discussion at where I work as well. But yeah, I think if you want progress, you need to be not afraid to break things sometimes. You need to be willing to take some risks. And
yeah, and I mean, it's not impeding gameplay. It's not impeding the player's ability to pick up items and whatnot.
It's annoying because the achievements for archaeology mean so much for the milestones and the skill. So it's not great, but it's not game breaking.
No, it's not. It's not. I don't have anything else left to say on that. Tanis, Diana, you guys good?
You know, I think we need to talk about the fly on the forehead. I mean, it used to be elephant in the room, but I like fly on the forehead. I think it's going to catch on. but no, on a serious note, did we just get the complicated cape rework without the capes? Did that dawn on anybody?
I don't think so. Like, they didn't really change the content, and
yeah, they didn't add new achievements to it. I mean, not
yet. But they can. Like, they all the stuff that they talked about. I mean, seriously, other than the cosmetic item, this is what they were talking about doing with reorganizing, putting everything where it belongs.
You know, like, you're right. There were six capes, and now there's six categories in addition to completionist.
It's probably one of those situations where they had a bunch of design documentation, they had a bunch of, you know, half implemented stuff, and they thought, you know what, let's do something with it.
Yeah.
And it an update that evolved into the update it is now. They probably fed into each other.
I guess I do
feel for the developers who worked on this, because that obviously it took a long time and it must have been incredibly difficult from a back-end like perspective.
Not to mention the QA effort for 1,165 files.
I think there was one QA. I remember seeing on Twitter there were two developers and one QA on it.
Oh.
Two coders, sorry, and one QA doing this entire thing.
And heroic effort.
Well, that's to say, from a front-end point of view, for most players, they probably aren't really going to notice it. So I just think, like,
yeah,
give them a bit of credit and, you know, pour one out for them, because there's obviously a huge amount of work that's gone in for a not a hugely sexy update. Like, it's obviously been necessary and, you know, it's a great amount of work, but it's not like a graphical update where everyone's going to be shouting about it and going, oh, yeah, it looks amazing. Like,
I mean, that's the curse of infrastructure engineers, right?
Yeah.
You've done your job well if nobody noticed your job.
Yeah, like, that's the sign of a good QA team is a quiet release.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it is. So
yeah, and people thought that the server...
The developers who were involved in this.
People thought that the server crash after this week's update launch was because of this, but no, it wasn't. It was actually something else. So there's... I mean, you can't immediately blame the update, and you know,
Servers crash sometimes.
It takes a little bit of fine granularity to figure out what the hell's going on, but nonetheless, I think it turned out well, and I look forward to see what comes from this. And it makes sense you're going to want to add new achievements because you can't be a Steam game forever and only have 20 achievements.
Yeah, that's true, and I guess that does make okay. That makes a lot more sense too, then.
Yeah, because they're going to want to hook into have it be able to hook into that easier, and be interesting to see how that all works. But, anyways, let's move on to the patch notes. We only got a few of them this week, enough that we can just rattle them off real quick here. Starting off, some changes to the Orth and Dig site, and actually some changes to the patch notes, so that there's now actually links in the patch notes to the various keywords that are being talked about.
Yeah, what do you guys think of that? Like, to me, it makes the whole thing feel a bit busy.
Yeah, it looks too busy, and it kind of bothers me with how I do this for the show here with highlighting and whatnot.
It played havoc with my work cam earlier when I was going over notes. It does not like different colors like that. It did not like that at all.
Like I truly appreciate the effort and that's being put into it, but in the past we've had patch notes where we look over them and we're like, what does this even mean? I think if you want to put more time in the patch notes, there's better ways.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna complain about the website right now. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I feel that anything that is a hyperlink that is not part of the page navigation, like a hyperlink that goes to a different part of the website or a different website entirely, should be in some form of blue.
I think that is very narrow-minded. I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. I feel that way because when you go back to
it is a bit confusing how it is exactly the same color as the headers. So.
Yeah. And, you know, that's just a personal preference I have that goes back two decades at this point.
Like, if you look at the related news, that's like a shade of blue. I bet if you made the links that shade of blue, it would actually all be a lot nicer.
Yeah.
But I'm not a designer, so.
Yeah. Anyways, Mr. Mordeaux will now assist with the Know Thy Measure mystery, which is also linked to the RuneScape wiki if you want to know what Know Thy Measure is. Screening volcanic ash when they'll progress appropriate yak track tasks. Previously it didn't. Magical nets at the deep sea fishing hub will now let you deposit cooked fish obtained from the cat's paw relic. I mean, that's okay, right?
Yeah, it's just like somebody's going to have gone there with the cat's paw and be like, I'm going to go and do some fishing, and then find out they can't bank the fish anymore.
Well, that's why it's been fixed.
And yes, I find the concept of somebody standing there with a pile of cooked fish in their hands.
like, this sucks. What am I going to do with that?
Grace,
I mean, instead of chucking it in the net, just chuck it in the ocean, right?
That's yeah.
Problem solved.
Grace of the Elves will no longer be prioritized over that of the Orth and Furnace Core when using Superheat Form. Of course, Orth and Furnace Core makes it so that Superheat Form doesn't drain your prayer points. And God Banners can now boost your archaeology level.
Yeah. Woo! You remember the God Banners? That's my favorite patch note of
but
the week.
But why?
Right? I don't know. I want a boost. It actually does count in archaeology too, because like if you can jump up that next tier of excavations, I mean that's where you want to be, right?
And God Banners are an amazing thing because they give you a plus one boost for half an hour, which is quite long. Mm-hmm. The way I got,
it's actually plus two.
Oh, it's plus two even. The way I got my level requirement for 7 stones is by doing half an hour of mining every day with the God Banner boost.
Yes.
I completely forgot about these.
Because yeah, man, like, mining used to be awful. You used to have to go to like the Living Rock Caverns to do any meaningful mining.
The LRC. So,
yeah, so God Banners and Seven Stones were my savior there.
Yeah, that's skilling deck content, Shane.
Yeah. Penguins spotted while you have max penguin points when they count towards your total penguin spotted that week.
Okay.
And that's it for the patch notes this week. Nice and small.
Nice and small.
We're going to move on.
Keep it tight.
We're going to move on to our listener questions in just a moment. But before we do that, I'll thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, making this episode possible, including the wonderful monthly bit that we just recorded yesterday, talking about the rework of the agility skill.
Sweet guy. It was majestic.
It really was. It really was. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, is this something that we could actually make happen? No, we're just living in a dream world. But anyways, we can wish. This week I'd like to thank Andrew C, Brock H, Cameron, Christian S, Danny W, Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jade W, Jason S, Jim M, Joe M, John P, Keski, Kevin G, Kyle, Nora, Owen L, Rastafa, Ricky A, Samantha R, Soupfinder, Steve D, Stabeev, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zachary K, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And, of course, if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB in there. You can find our entire back catalog of monthly bits, all 28 of them, by the time you're hearing this. And, of course, you'll get to vote on the monthly bit topic, vote on movie night, and attend our roundtables and so much more, all for as little as $1 a month. For $3 a month, you'll gain a special VIP rank in Discord and get access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And in case you're wondering what we're going to be doing with this, well, we are, of course, doing our monthly bits. We have a roundtable that is scheduled for this Saturday. Details has been posted on the Patreon website on that. You guys might be listening to this a little bit after the fact, but if you're listening to it day of, come join us. And, of course, movie night as well, inside update. And, you know, looking a bit to the future, we have RSBNB merchandise planned at the $200 a month tier. And should we ever reach that absurd $500 a month tier, Tannis and I I have trouble saying this. We'll subject ourselves to some pain in terms of spicy wings, starting off tame, going up to very spicy. I'm eager to try that, actually.
Yeah, the wings are hot and the questions will be hotter.
What kind of questions are we talking about?
I don't know. We might have to get the Patreon community involved.
Ask Reddit.
Oh. Ban her.
But if any of this sounds useful to you, or you just want to support RSBNB, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everybody. It truly, truly means the world to us that you put this much faith in us and allow us to continue to produce these wonderful podcast episodes. Thank you. All right. This one is a question now from the R man, jumping in on the archaeology train.
Hey, hey, it's the RR man here. Finally got to 99 archaeology. Oh, what a ride. Can't wait for 120. Hey, just wondering, when you guys got to 99, I think this probably Shane more so than Tennis, as I think he's recently picked up the level. How many artifacts had you discovered and or restored? Because I'm currently at about 750, and I didn't use any bonus XP to get here or do any speeding up stuff. It seems like I'm way off getting that Guildmaster. So what level were you when you got Guildmaster, or how close are you to Guildmaster? Can't wait for that 120 grind. What a skill. Peace out.
I think it was about 103.
I've actually got a strategy which I used for one of the other levels. I went back to the level 1 archaeology spot, and I'm picking up daggers and crossbows like nobody's business. I think this is a legit strategy. I don't know, it seems to be pretty quick. I thought I'd let anyone know if they wanted to, you know, if they needed a few more artifacts for it. Peace out.
You surprised me there, Mr. Iron Man, with that. I thought you were finished talking, so I started answering.
Shane, how rude.
I think I was around 103-ish. I got to 99, and I think I had around maybe 120 left to go. So I got there around 880-ish, I think. 880 restorations.
So I looked at this before we started, and that's the only like qualification I have for Guildmaster. And so, I mean, I've got the 1,000, but I just, I mean, what was it, 99 last week? I'm 102 now. I think mine's just higher, though, because I restore a lot. I wasn't real careful with my, like, collection, so I had to, you know, go back and do several same things over and over. And I did a ton of grinding at Warforged to get what's the currency? The notes, the
Chronotes.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Chronotes was a bigger barrier. Honestly, I actually had to buy them.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah.
Can't afford all that.
Yeah, I'm still getting the Chronotes for all the rewards. I'm only missing about 50k for the precision upgrade. I got everything else. But I planned ahead a bit. I wanted to avoid being in that situation where I had to grind a few more levels. So I didn't got it exactly right because I ended up getting XP a bit faster than I expected. But I was doing a lot of collections for Tetra Compasses that were maybe a bit lower. So I kind of avoided the best XP per hour methods and went for the best compass per hour methods,
yeah,
I guess.
And honestly,
that's a viable way.
And honestly, here, even at 112, you know, being two levels off of Red Rum 2 finishing, I'm still Tetra Compass farming to get to 112.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and for me, I got pretty close, actually. I had all the artifacts figured out. Like, I ended up doing a few lower level collections on the way. Like, when I was level 97, I did some math and figured it out. But I think I ended up being just under level 100 for getting Guildmaster. So I'd like to think that was pretty spot on.
Now, is this math as you define it or arithmetic?
It was arithmetic. Fair
okay.
enough.
All right.
Why do you correct me?
I just had to check.
No, I just trialed and error a bit till the numbers added up, so I didn't really throw any formulas at it.
All right, how are you, Diana?
I mean, I got Guildmaster when I hit 99. Like, it was what I did after I got 99.
Oh, wow, right away.
Yeah, I managed to get it straight up. I cannot remember.
Were you doing daily challenges?
Potentially.
Okay.
I don't remember much of how I got to 90.
All right. I was very religious with my daily challenges.
It's one big blur just to get the lore episodes out.
I have been skilling harder than I've ever skilled in my life, so I don't remember what I've been doing for the past 6 months.
That's a 2020 time dilation there.
Oh, God, yeah. I do know that I got... Yeah, I had everything I needed when I hit 99. And I'm at 108 now, and I've hit about 2,000 restorations.
Holy cow!
I think that's what it said on my thing. I've done a lot of the, the early level Zaros one. I've done a lot of those for chrono farming.
Yeah, what I did a lot as well is because I... Especially in the beginning, I tried avoiding material caches if I needed materials. I was like, okay, I'll just go to one of the sites that actually gives me the right materials. So I have a lot of damaged artifacts in my bank, especially at the lower levels, because I went there for the materials.
I'm level 112 with 1,662 restorations.
Let me
I'm going to have to log back in again and just check, because I think it said 2000, but...
Where can I see archaeology?
Just open your journal and go to the artifacts page and it will be there.
I have 1100 restored at level 102.
It's on the artifact. Yeah, restoration's completed, 2064.
Wow.
How on earth?
I don't know how you did that.
I don't know when I did that.
Wow.
When did I think I'm just very inefficient. I'm not a very good skiller. I'm generally fairly all over the place with my efficiency. So wow.
Impressive.
Well, and the downside is that I've been, you know, trying to get chronotes because I can't buy them anymore.
You want to know what a fun little tidbit is? My restore rank has surpassed my discover number. I've restored 1,662, but only discovered 1,645.
How did you... Oh, because you got stuff from screening soil, no. I guess.
Tetra compasses and the water fan.
Water fan gives artifacts?
Yeah, it can duplicate an artifact.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I had 1,100 restorations, right? My discoveries are like, I think probably almost twice as much. Let me check. Like 1,500, so not quite. But I have over 400 damaged artifacts just sitting around. I need to do a cleanup, but I can't be bothered getting all the materials.
Yeah, and just to, you know, go back to the question when I was pushing to get Guildmaster at the end, I went back to, you know, the early Zaros 1 and just did that collection a number of times to knock out the last 120 or so. 120 artifacts, that is. But yeah.
Mm.
All right, thank you for the question, RR Man. We're going to move on. We hope to take more questions next week. This one came in and it was archaeology themed and it was a quick one, so we just decided to take it this week. But in tech news this week, you know, we've all played online games with people. And we all know there are time to times there are those idiots in the online gaming world that are just, you know, toxic, right? And
I'm sitting right here, Shane.
Who? Are you pointing your finger at me?
About me like this. No, I said I'm sitting right here, Shane.
Oh,
you
don't have
to talk about me like that.
Okay. Well, we should play some games then. You could definitely spice things up. But, you know, you're always wondering how are they going to remove people from game servers that are causing that problem, or how could even Jagex do this in-game? Well, Amazon has apparently devised a potential solution to this. In a patent filing, they detail the proposal for a system that allows for behavior-aware player selection in multiplayer games, which was originally made in December 2017. But the patent notes down that traditional matchmaking systems focus on skill-based matchmaking, right? Your SR systems in Overwatch and StarCraft and League of Legends and the like. But what they suggest doing is, rather than grouping by skill, have an option to group based on player behavior. And they say this, contrary to this assumption, players' enjoyment may depend heavily based on the behaviors of other users with which they are paired, such as the proclivity of other players to engage in profanity or other undesirable behaviors. So what they would do with this mechanism would isolate all toxic players into a separate pool, so that one toxic player is only paired with other toxic players. I could only imagine what this would have done for Overwatch. Yeah. I don't know how you could... I mean... This is a patent, and we're talking about patenting a matchmaking system. I don't know if anybody's ever done that before. And I don't know if that's something you could get away with. But if they can, all the power to them. And
if they can't, can we get this for World 66 portables?
We get a special little bastard world where all the little bastards go to sleep and
be
to each other.
Yes.
Counter-Strike Source is calling. You know, I don't like toxic players. I think they're bad. But, you know, there's just something about playing a game where if somebody starts acting like an idiot, you can just tell them off. There's something interesting about that, I find.
Yeah, I mean, there's some situations. Like, I used to play a lot of Rocket League, and my friend is very demolition heavy in that game, and that's a nice source for toxicity. And you know, if people start being mad and toxic about being demolished, you just demolish them some more, and that's actually quite a lot of fun.
It really is.
So
throw it back.
That being said, you know, Rocket League has been one of the games where I ended up just turning off my chat.
Oh wow!
The only thing I have on is Quick Chat on that because, you know, yeah, you can have some fun with toxicity in a way, but in the end, I just want to have a fun. I want to just play a fun game. And I really can't be bothered listening to, you know, people telling me to F off and other things, do all the nasty things to myself.
Why don't you throw some of your special Dutch insults at them?
Because I'm not that kind of person. Like, I don't respond that way. I just, you know, let them rage, but I'll just turn
whatever
it off.
Whatever they say, you just say it back, but put your mama in front of it.
It doesn't sound like I would have fun doing that. And that's, and in the end, like, I play these games because I want to have fun, right? And if I can turn off these disruptive factors, then yes, please. If Amazon is going to do that for me by just chucking them in the bastard server, even better.
Even better.
All right, let's move on to the next piece of tech news, because that one somebody would need to implement to come to pass. And of course, Amazon killed off their game. Crucible, was it called?
Yeah, Crucible. Poor Amazon. Yeah. They keep trying to make games and they keep failing spectacularly. One day they'll manage it.
Yeah. But if anybody's in the need of a cheap computer, Raspberry Pi has something to say. They launched something called the Raspberry Pi 400, which they're marketing as a $70 desktop PC. What you get is a keyboard that has all the ports you would want on it. It's got an SD card to install Raspbian, which is their version of Linux. And the whole idea behind this is that in this keyboard, you attach your monitor, your mouse, and install Linux, and you have a Raspberry Pi 4, which is, they say, 40 times faster than the initial Raspberry Pi that they launched many, many years ago.
And I'm so sad that Jagex released the fixes to the macOS client, because otherwise I could have made the joke that it probably runs RuneScape better than your Mac.
I mean, it'd be an interesting test. It's got.
I love how you're entertaining the possibility.
I mean, you can buy the kit. It's got. It's got the SD card, HDMI cable, USB-C power supply, or if you just want the computer for $70, you can get that too. And they got a number of ports on there. They got the standard, I forget what the name of it port is, but it's the port with all the pins on it that can interface with hardware. I don't know what you call that. But they've got USB, USB-C. Ethernet, of course, and I'd imagine they'd have Wi-Fi as well on this. But $70 for this, you know, we were talking in pre-show that a lot of people in this day and age need a computer that is good for Zooming and whatnot. And when you start to put all these video conferencing things in, you know, even the modern computers, they start to kind of break down a bit, right? So it'd be interesting to see what something like a Raspberry Pi 400 would do. And the port I was trying to remember is called the GPIO port, a 40-pin GPIO port.
So this doesn't have any screen or anything attached to it, right?
Like, no.
So it's 70 bucks, but what do you lose on a screen? Like, I guess, okay, you could attach it to a TV or something that you already have, but
yeah.
Like, what? Oh, is the personal computer kit, does it come with a... No, that doesn't come with a monitor.
No.
So how cheap of a monitor can you get these days?
Probably, I don't know.
Let's check.
Probably
let's check.
$100-ish dollars US, I'd say.
Let's see. What's the cheapest I can get? Can I get something for like...
You know what's also really interesting about this? It has 4 gigs.
40 euros. You can get a refurbished monitor for 40 euros.
This thing also has 4 gigs of DDR4 3200 RAM on it. So it's a little light on the RAM side.
I mean, these microcomputers are just a matter of time, right? Like, we stuff so much in a mobile phone.
Yeah.
You know, just
and I think
time.
People are going to start to rethink the system on a chips next week once Apple announced this is their first Apple Silicon device.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about this, like in a lot of the up and coming countries where people are going online right now, like India,
this is all
China.
You need.
Right now, these people are coming. Like the only way they have access to the internet is through their mobile phone, right? Like their mobile countries. This is something that a lot of companies actually don't understand, and why you know PUBG Mobile and Call of Duty Mobile are so successful there. This is the only thing there. Like they skipped the desktop stage. They skipped the unwieldy big machine stage.
They even skipped
but
the
like
laptop
saying,
stage.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, this microcomputer thing might, you know, start filling a few gaps there. And at this price point, you know, it's getting there.
Yeah. These things also support native 4K video decoding and 1080p video encoding as well.
Said it's come a long way from being a little emulator device that you use to play, you know, retro ROMs and stuff. Like that's where I heard Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and they're also very popular for the, you know, the school computing who want to get involved with, you know, the whole hardware stuff, because that's the whole point of the GPIO port, is that it can connect to other hardware devices and you can do fun little experiments on it and the like with that.
Another common use case is using it as a so-called pie hole, which is basically turning it, I think it's like in your, like between your connection, like your router connection and the internet, you put the Raspberry in the middle and it strips out like a list of trackers and websites at that level, which is like you have ad blocker, but this is like ad blocker on the hardware level,
yeah.
So it's even stricter.
Yeah, and
it's
all you need
a DNS proxy,
and all you need to do that is throw on another USB Ethernet dongle to add a second Ethernet device to it, and there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, if you just want to get the regular Raspberry Pi computer, you can get that with 8 gigs of RAM as well. Same device with that. So, very neat. Very neat stuff. If you look on the actual Raspberry Pi 4 page, this computer and the mini version supports dual 4K displays.
God. That's pretty impressive. I think not
really?
Even my MacBook supports that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Indeed. All right, last piece of tech news. Fortnite is returning to iOS via the NVIDIA Cloud Gaming Service.
Aha! A loophole!
I thought that was gone.
Yeah,
is
it was.
Still
the direct app is gone, but the NVIDIA Cloud Gaming Service that will run via browser in Safari, because of the way Apple has its restrictions on game streaming services will now support Fortnite. And Apple will not get a cut of any of the items sold within it because it's, you know, just bypassing Apple. They're just using the browser as a display.
I love it.
And,
look, I like Apple too, but every once in a while someone needs to punch them in the nose. That's great.
Yeah, and people were wondering what you need 5G for. Well, this is a perfect example of something that 5G can help you with, you know, video game streaming like this. You have to wonder if this is the way Apple wants it to be and if that's the way NVIDIA wants it to be. But I don't know. Somebody needs to go out there and test on an iPad how NVIDIA's cloud gaming services via Safari, because, you know, I have my doubts about Safari on iOS if it could provide a good enough experience on this.
I mean, NVIDIA's, I mean, I think their service was okay. I just had thought.
Did you try that one? Covered,
yeah, and from what we had covered, it's, I just think it's too expensive. I thought it was too expensive.
I mean, a lot of game developers pulled out, right? So, you know, they were hoping on a massive catalog of basically every game ever, and that's not happening now. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. For some reason, I'm not holding up high hopes for the NVIDIA service. I think there's a started to be a lot of competition in that space, and I think other companies have the better position right now.
Yeah, and you know whether or not you want to use this as a sole option for playing Fortnite, that's a question that I think only people can answer and see if they're going to get enough good enough experience on this. But you know, I think whenever you put Fortnite in front of anything, that is what's going to drive traffic to it. So, all right.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly smart, right? Because it's the only way to play Fortnite on an iOS device right now. So that, yeah, that's potentially gonna come a lot of good things out of it until Apple finds the other loophole in the contract and shuts down NVIDIA. But
yep.
If that happens, then I think Apple will start losing a lot of allies all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you know, you have to ask, you know, how far are they going to go with that? But only time will tell.
Hey, it's just market speaking, right?
That's right. Moving on, we are running a archaeology skill of the month contest starting on the 15th, which is after double XP ends. I know it's random. Fishing came up first. So fishing is the double XP one, but archaeology will run after. You can still use bonus XP on that one. And, you know, we actually got a good number of people signing up for the fishing one during bonus XP, so that should be fun to see, including the ceremonial Jam ND52 has already 200 mil in fishing. So you can see that right there as a statement. But we're going to start with some achievements this week. I believe Sirion's got us on the road here.
Yeah, so we'll start with RRMan NZ getting 99 archaeology on November the 4th. Izant getting 99 archaeology on November the 3rd. Schnetz getting 99 construction on November the 2nd. Surge Aurora, 99 invention on November the 1st. And Ghost Caping getting 99 archaeology on October 31st. Lots of archaeologies coming in just ahead of the double XP weekend. Or should I say just after the grace period has ended.
Yeah, amnesty is over. Also on the 31st, we have Harlot Man with 99 farming. Izant again with 99 mining. Love Natural with 99 archaeology. Proto Man with 99 archaeology. And One Rib with 99 strength on October 30th.
Okay, and then we have Jill Fleur with 99 archaeology on October 30th. Love Natural, 99 fire making, also on October 30th. Mats 374 with 99 archaeology, Merovich with 99 invention, and Mike Strike 3 with 99 slayer, all on October 30th.
Nice. Well, we also have Sparty Pants with 99 Archaeology on October 30th. And iZant, again, been busy this week with 99 Woodcutting on October 29th. Junior Midral with 99 Invention on October 29th. Poitato with 99 Woodcutting on the 29th. And that's it. Good job, everybody.
And this is, of course, the inevitable calm before the storm as Double XP is starting up in just a few hours here from recording time. So,
oh, God, really? Is that? Wait, when does it start?
Friday.
About 12 hours from now.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, right. I wasn't ready for that, but...
I know. I'm not either. I'm going to have to be up late, like, getting everything...
I've got so much stuff to do this weekend. Like, oh, no.
Oh, it's okay. You have the entire next week and the weekend after.
Yeah, just turn it off.
Yeah, you can just turn it off.
Okay, that's slightly better. Oh, phew. Right, okay. Yeah. We'll be fine.
No XP
we'll be fine.
Turn it off.
120 Archaeology. Let's go.
Let's go.
All right. Apparently, I have a pick of the week, but I don't have a pick of the week.
Yeah, I don't know who
you stole it.
What? Did you steal my pick of the week?
No, you have a pick of the week.
Yes, I do have a pick of the week. So my pick of the week this week is a YouTube channel. I've been following it for a while. It's called Melody Sheep. And basically, what you have on these on this channel is. I would call them documentaries. They're almost documentaries. They're usually about anywhere from like 20 to 40 minutes in length, and they're very CGI heavy, and they are very music heavy. Yeah, of course, Melody Sheep. It's getting late here, and this person composes all the music and creates all the visual effects, and you know, I find it very calming to look at. I find it very fascinating to look at. To me, they're pieces of art. They're educational as well, and a lot of it has a bit of a Cosmos vibe. If you have seen Cosmos, there's a lot of quotes in there from famous scientists, and yeah, all in all, it's a very positive tone, and I find it. One of these things that makes me really appreciate the wonders of our universe. So, yeah, if you need that bit of optimism and positivity in your life right now, then I definitely recommend looking for it. And I think they have albums on like Spotify and all what have you as well. If you enjoy the music,
I know I just sat when you sent me this one. I forget when it was, but the Journey Through the End of Time one picked to the end of the channel. How does the universe meet its end? It's a 29-minute video, but I just sat there through that entire thing, and I didn't even realize it was that long.
Exactly. Like, it really draws you in, and it's a piece of art, right? Like, it's a 30-minute painting in a way, and, you know, they're on the short side, but I would pay a cinema ticket to watch this in full IMAX 3D with Dolby surround sound. Like that's the quality of stuff, and it's just one bloke doing this, which I think is super impressive.
And you know, this one is actually really good because it puts in perspective. You know, we think a year is a long time. Then some people think 100 years is a long time, but no, 1 million years is a long time. No. 1 billion years is a long time, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see 1,000 years ago, we consider that so long. But no, that's a minuscule drop in time. Minuscule drop in time compared to how this looks.
Yeah, exactly.
So, give it a wash. I mean, a wash? A watch? check out some good stuff on this channel. I really enjoyed the one about the future, especially just showing what, you know, the Earth could potentially look like all these thousands of years in the future, potentially. And, you know, they're based on a bit of science,
even,
too, right?
Even on astronomical scales, like, we think that, like, you say, like, oh, we think 1,000 years is long, but we're also much smaller. Like, humanity has existed for only a small fraction of time that Earth exists. But even if you look at how long the Earth will exist compared to the entire duration of the universe, it's not even a tiny bit. Like, it's insignificant.
Yeah.
Compared to the wider whole. And I find it humbling. And that I think that helps us appreciate what we have more.
And, you know, there's also many other ways to look at it, too, in terms of our own mortality and such. But, you know, this is just the one video we're kind of going at. There's many others on this channel as well. So I think that's a good pick of the week. Thank you. What have we been up to? Let's start with you, Tanis.
Archaeology, and I guess I'm going to have to get my, like, farm set up and everything tonight, get that ready. But other than that, my plan was pretty much archaeology.
All right.
That's it.
Diana?
I've been tinkering away at Orthon and really, really enjoying it. I think it's such a lovely site and lots of great story and lore in there. And I suppose I'll be doing archaeology for DXP, which I wasn't expecting. But yes, that's my plan for the next couple of weeks, I think.
And Sirion.
So I've been doing some archaeology as well. I've finished the 101 and 102 sites in Orphan. Now I'm back to my compass farming, back at Warforge. I'll probably be putting down my Matok over the next week. I just enjoy the skill too much to burn through it with bonus XP, so, you know, I'm just going to avoid it. Or I might do it and then pause the XP, I guess. That's now a possibility.
Yeah.
I've been getting ready for some big high Herblore drops, XP drops next week. Just doing my farming her runs. And that's it, really. Just chilling and taking it easy.
All right. As for me, I will... You know, I think we're gonna look at doing archaeology on double XP. I'm kind of also of the same mind that, you know, maybe I should not do it and just take it naturally at this point in time. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure on that. I'm kind of on the fence about that. If I'm gonna go for the 120 on double XP or not. The other option, and I considered doing this, and, you know, you guys might think I'm losing my mind at this. You think I should go for 200 mil farming this double XP? I don't know that I could get
Hell
that.
Yeah.
Go for it. Do it.
Hell yeah.
So.
Get it, boy.
Maybe. I don't know. But that's what I'm considering. But aside from that, you know, I've just been doing archaeology, pedaling along, focusing in on Red Rum 2 after finishing the 112 dig site, and looking forward to getting back to Orthon after this. So that's what I've been up to. And with that being said, I think we can wrap this episode of RSBNB Update right now. And if you guys want to subscribe to us, you can just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on all the podcast listeners out there: Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, even YouTube. update.rsbnb.com/subscribe or youtube.com/rsbnb if you want that. And, you know, you can also find full show notes there at update.rsbnb.com. And I'll just give a mention yet again to the Patreon page, where that wonderful monthly bit about the agility redesign will be appearing in concert with this episode. So definitely give that a check at patreon.com/rsbnb. And we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
See ya.